Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the spoiler burst via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Hey, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Regan. That is Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, well, this one's a little bit more special than any of the other ones, Johnny.
Yeah, it's a little more serious, but a little more time and more timely. We usually don't do timely stuff, but also I think a very needed conversation.
Yeah, it's a needed conversation. You know, we have two very good friends that we really, really enjoy talking with and being around. And you've had you've had a few opportunities to go out and yeah. actually hang out, which I'm super jealous because I have not been able to go out there and do that yet.
They're pretty cool dudes.
Yeah. And we just thought with all the stuff going on, all the protesting, Black Lives Matter, police reform, it was the right time. Well, it's always the right time to talk to these guys, but it was an important time. I think it's the
more pointed time. Yeah, more pointed time.
Yeah, to talk with Danny and Morgan of Fourth Wall Productions.
Yeah,
our brothers from other mothers.
But yeah, I mean, we asked them. We wanted to have this conversation, but we only wanted to open it up bigger than us because as two 30 late 30s or mid 40s white dudes, we can only say so much.
Yeah, well,
but we expand that conversation out. We can say a lot more.
Yeah, well, having Danny and Morgan, you know, talk about things and they're super open. You know what yeah. I mean? You can talk to them and have a conversation and learn. And Morgan is very educated when it comes to Black history and yeah. all that. You know, he's quoting dates and times and speeches, and he knows all that stuff. Yeah, yeah, he knows his stuff. And it's just fun because you learn, for one thing. And this is a sensitive subject. And the fact that you can have an open conversation with two people and have an actual conversation
right
is huge.
I mean, do we solve the problem on this conversation?
Yes. No.
We do. Of course not. Listen, at the end, we give the solution. No, we don't. But I mean, we talk about the topic and we do what needs to happen. Conversation needs to happen from all sides. And this is, I mean, obviously, the four of us are very much like-minded in a lot of ways. But it's still a conversation that can be had from different viewpoints. And I think it's a good one to listen to, a good one to have.
Yeah, yeah. Danny and Morgan are our Black counterparts.
Right, right.
Like you and Danny are more alike, and me and Morgan are more alike, and it's so funny because
it is hilarious. Talking,
yeah, and it's just I don't know. It always makes me laugh because we're like the same people,
right?
But I think that's important because it shows that just because our skin is different and maybe some things of our culture is different, not all. You know what I mean? There's not
some.
We're all raised in America, so our cultures are very much the same. You know what I mean?
Different levels and
different
stuff.
Different levels, yeah. Different, yeah, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, a lot of it's the same. And I think it's important to see this conversation happen that, you know, a couple of white guys and a couple of Black guys can get together and have a really nice conversation about what's happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we should just jump into it, man.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do it. All right, guys, we're super excited because it's not every day we have Fourth Wall Productions with us, and we got the founders right here. Morgan, Danny,
yes,
thank you guys so much for coming on. And today's a little bit more special with everything going on in the world. We have a pandemic that's happened. Then on top of that, Ferguson. Just got to say the name and everybody knows what the fuck's going on. And sorry for the language, but it's kind of true. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and
hopefully there will be some good to come out of this tragedy because we're seeing a lot happen right now. And I wanted you guys to come on because, Morgan, you did a wonderful Facebook post right after when everything started really coming out and all the protests really started to come up. And
you weren't, for lack of a better word, it's you weren't putting blame on just one group of people. You're like, look, this is everybody's got to get into this. Everybody's got to be a part of this. And I'm kind of hoping to give you a bigger audience. Not that I can give you much of a bigger one than you already did, but a broader audience than what you currently have, to maybe hopefully repeat some of that stuff and get people to understand. I was talking to Johnny a couple of weeks ago, and I told him the difference between a racist and and somebody who's prejudiced. Mm. And it's something I learned back in early in sociology class, where in America, you have to be white to be racist. Mm-hmm. Some people have a real problem with that. They don't understand that you can be prejudiced. You can be any color and be prejudiced. Mm-hmm. But they don't understand the concept of the people that have the majority of the power, the majority of the money, keeping an oppressive downward spiral on minorities of that group. You know what I mean? And so you have to be a white person to be a racist, which is really hard for people to understand. And what are you guys thinking?
I disagree with you. I know some racists of all colors. I agree with you that the system is built for Caucasian people to succeed, and more than likely, if you're a racist, then you know you might be a white people are more. They're more white racist than any other thing, but I think I do know. I've talked to my parents about things like this, and I think that anywhere in the world, if you build a system, whether it's just a small community, a business, or whatever it is, and you exclude or you you favor one race over another, you can you can be a racist and be black. If I were to build a business, here, and I said I'm not gonna, hire white people because I hate them, then right. I would be, even though that's a micro, don't laugh, Morgan. I see your face. I see your
face. I'm just listening, man.
I see your face.
I'm just listening.
But that's my personal opinion, though.
When it comes to us four, like me and this guy down over here, Morgan, are of a lot of the like minds, and then this guy Johnny and this guy down here Danny are more of a like mind, and I laugh because if you go back to some of our old podcasts when we had him on, it's Danny and I or Morgan and I talking about how much we love Avengers 2, and then we're talking it and we're loving it. These two going, "Nah, you guys are nuts." And I feel like it's more and more like that the more it is. I think Danny, the difference when you look at a sociological level. Mm-hmm. It's you're right. Anybody can. I think what you're explaining to me in my mind is the fact that is prejudice. They're being, the difference for a racist is the micro and macro level, right? That's why I'm saying you have to be, and I know they'll probably get a lot of hate for this. You have to be white.
Oh, we will, for sure. I don't really care.
Like if you go to Ethiopia, then you'd have to be black to be a racist because. Right. It's the people who have the majority of the power that have the ability to oppress. You know what I mean? If you have a black owned business and you're not going to hire white people because you don't like white people, then it's still a micro level. You're still being prejudiced. I think that's for me is the difference. It's, I think on the one-on-one basis, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
to have an understanding.
I mean, it becomes, like Kendrick said, I mean, it becomes a microcosm at that point. But I also get what Danny's saying that, yes, like, I mean, because at its base level, if you look up the definition, racist just means that you believe that you are superior to another race. You might not even believe that you're superior to all races. But if you believe you're superior to another race, whatever race you believe you're superior to, that will make you a racist because you believe that you're superior to them and they're inferior to you. But I understand what Kendrick is saying is from it, because I mean, we're talking about what's happening right now, and we're talking about this happening in America. And America, there's no way to microcosm America and what's happening in America. So it's, there's no way to make that a micro. So that's why it would be. And a lot of times when you have conversations concerning race, it's going to be touchy it's going to be touchy because it. If you're talking about it candidly, it's a sensitive issue because nobody wants to see themselves in that vein. If you're a misogynist, and a man, it's going to be hard for you to actually accept the fact that you're a misogynist. Right. If you are, you know,
you love your daughter, you love your wife.
Exactly. You're always going to have a go-to that takes you out of what somebody else would characterize you as to be that, because you're always going to have a token something to be like, no, I can't be because this, or I can't be because of that. But you're not actually looking at what your contributions are as to why that person's saying that, which is why, like, for me personally, I think one of the biggest things that has to be done in the time period that we're in is that one of the biggest reasons things continue is because it's been morphed into a political argument. It's not just racial, it's a political thing. So it's past black and white, it goes to liberal and conservative, Dem and Republican or whatever. And then when you get into those conversations about how you change things, it quickly changes into where you guys on the left or you guys on the right. And for anybody that's outside of that, if you've already withdrawn yourself from that, honestly, it's a trick. You know what I'm saying? If you've already withdrawn yourself from that trick and you see that clearly, then you watching two people have that conversation are like, so that's not what this is about. You know what I'm saying? Like you can very clearly point to that and be like, yeah, so this George Floyd thing, there's a guy in handcuffs that's on the ground. There are police officers that are detaining him. He's on the ground. He's not a threat. There's no reason for them to still be on him. They're not moving. The whole crowd's telling you that he's dying. We can see that he's dying. They can see that he's dying. Nobody's stopping this. This is wrong. Doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, doesn't matter whether you're a Republican, doesn't matter whether you're a Trump supporter, Biden, Obama, doesn't matter whether you're Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, none of that matters. What matters is what we just saw is wrong. Where it gets complicated, where you don't change things, is that you then look at it through the lens of one of those other stupid titles. Yeah. The titles don't matter. And when you start to put titles on things instead of it just being right and wrong, then you end up with issues and nothing changes, because now you have a reason to shield yourself from changing anything.
I think that's dope that you just said that. We've seen time and time again, you know, we've had marches because of police brutality. This police brutality has been the one that has been, you know, the most visible, I'd want to say. But like you were just saying, I think racism has seeped into so much of American society that you can't talk about police brutality without talking about racism and the prison pipeline and the 13th Amendment and, you know, Republican, Democrat. Like it's so entrenched into American culture and in the system, every system in America, that it's kind of hard to separate it from any other conversation now. So just like you were saying, if I'm a Democrat or a Republican, and somebody says this policy that you created is racist, if I say gerrymandering, you're gerrymandering, you know, my city, and this is a racist act because I can show you where the black people lived and how you drew around them, and then, you know, now you're saying, well, all Republicans aren't racist. Well, that's not what I was saying. I'm saying what you're doing is racist.
It's so, the act, not the group. It's like, you gotta separate the two things.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's purposeful though. Cause I mean,
yeah,
race is literally, if you want to go, it depends on how high you want to go into the conversation, like how high into the macro you want to look at it.
Right.
Race in itself is not even a real thing. Like it's not, it was literally invented in America to make sure that there was separation of people working together.
You need a blood transfusion. You and I can, you know what I mean? As long as we're the same type, you know, we're fine. Exactly. You know,
race is not, it was literally and created as a construct to make sure that, because the other part of race that always breaks down into the country is money. And when things first started and there were indentured servants, both white and black, that came to the country and were working together, you had Bacon's Rebellion that had white and black servants.
Yeah.
Slaves, whatever you want to call them, that came together to say, this is effed up. We're changing this. So then they work together to start doing that. Once that happened, then you have the people that are in power that need that labor to say, oh, we can't have that. So the quickest way to stop that is to separate it and say, well, yeah, you're a slave, but at least you're not black. And then you didn't want to do that. You just give, you don't have to give money. Like, you don't have to give a whole bunch more money. You just give certain privileges that you give certain privileges to one group and like, take those privileges from another one. Exactly. All it takes is that you just need to be able to see that you're better than, you see what I'm saying? That you're better than or in a better position than, or more mobile, easier to, you've been put in a place of, and this is another buzzword, but privilege. You've been put into a place of privileges that you have more privilege than somebody else. And because of that, you're in a better space. And then once you do that, now you have, oh yeah, we should hate them. Whereas before they were working together because they all had the same purpose. It's not about right and wrong anymore. Now it's about the title again.
What is something that Black Lives Matters, the movement, is getting right and something they're getting wrong?
I would say...
That's a loaded question.
Yeah. So I had this conversation a while back when Black Lives Matter first kicked up. And I understand why they chose the phrase.
Yeah.
Just saying Black Lives Matter. I get why they just stopped there. If I was a part of the original group, I don't know if I would have kept it there at just Black Lives Matter or Black Lives Matter too. You see what I'm saying? But I will be honest with you, if they said Black Lives Matter too, it still wouldn't stop the hate on the other side of it.
No, yeah, it's really the same thing.
Exactly. It wouldn't matter.
Now, you'd have some people who are like, oh, well, the two makes sense now. But for the most part, the people who are against it, the two wouldn't make a difference.
It would not make a difference at all. Like, it would make it because honestly, again, I know why they chose to use the term that they did. They're trying to cut directly to it. Like, hey, like it should be inherent in the fact that if you're a person that says all lives matter, it should be inherent to you in order for all lives to matter that Black lives have to matter. Like, you know what I'm saying? That should be inherent. But again, because titles get put on things,
yeah,
it goes outside of that and it becomes something else. And it looks like Black people are trying to make themselves special. It's very similar to when the Black Panthers first came out in the 60s. I just had this conversation with a friend and he didn't see it that way until I said it to him, but I was like, the Black Panthers have never killed anybody. There are no bodies like as far as murders and killings and stuff like that, they have never killed anybody, but the entire country was horrified of them. One, because the whole media covered them, and two, well, mostly because of how the media covered them.
For sure.
But it was really more so the audacity of them to stand up and say, I'm not going to let you continue to come and F up this community, whether it be our own, the police, or anybody else. Like, we're going to stand up and do this or do that. And because they did that, again, it gets labeled as something. And it's like, you got the audacity to try to stand up for yourself? Nope.
Right.
Nope. Not in this country, you're not. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The literal United States government makes it makes them public enemy number one and breaks it apart. And it's no different than Black Lives Matter. It should have been very well seen again, like we just said. I'm not saying your life doesn't matter. There's nowhere in that statement that says your life doesn't matter. Matter of fact, right. It's very apparent that your life matters.
Right.
Everything that we look at in this country shows that. You know what I'm saying? Because again, if you were dead, if you were in George Floyd's position, that would not have gone the same way. One, the cop probably would have got up. Two, even if the cop didn't get up, one of the other citizens could have come over there to try to get the cop off and not feared for their life for the cop to shoot them. I asked that question on my page to my friends, like, if I was in George Floyd's position, would you intercede? And it was cool. Yeah, it does a lot that would want to. You see what I'm saying? And that's how a lot of people answer. But one of the reasons I answer the question, one, is because I think people need to get themselves in that mode of thought, not to fight the police, but in being willing to stand up for somebody else and their right to live or have that same right that you do. So I think people need, white, black, and everybody needs to get themselves into that mindset, but also to show the dichotomy between how black people responded versus white people. Because most of my black friends are like, I want to. You know what I'm saying? They, because they know ahead of time, if they take steps towards that cop,
hey, they're probably
gonna,
you get pulled over by the police. My buddy that I lived with, his name is Dave. He's a great guy. He's a, and he happens to be black.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home, and as he got into the door, the cop pulled into our driveway. I witnessed all of this. Pulled mm-hmm. into the driveway, turned the lights on after Dave was already opening the door, right? Mm-hmm. Dave walked into the house and then refused to open the door for the cop. And the cop was, of course, banging on the door for an hour and a half. Finally, it was like,
he was texting me during that. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah. I was like, what is going on? He's like, well, we had an aerial plane witness him swerve in and out of the lane. And Dave was like, yeah, I was messing with my stereo. And then I got home. And then, but that was 15 miles ago. And then the cop, the cop in the car didn't catch up with them, right? Until he was in the thing. But he caught up to him on the side road before he even entered the neighborhood. It's like, well, why didn't you pull him over on the side road then? If you really felt something was wrong, why didn't you pull him over then? You waited until he gets out. And then he kept trying to get Dave to come out of the house. And I'm like, Dave, don't leave the house. You leave the house, they're tackling you.
Yeah. I literally saw today on, I think it was on TikTok, actually, I saw it. Yeah. There was a video of a group of black people who were in a car somewhere in California, and they were pulled over by the police. And they had that, they used that same thing. They said an aerial surveillance, they were suspects in a robbery. It was a 71-year-old man, his son, and two other black people in the car. And this is how I'm going to answer the other question. I think that what Black Lives Matter is doing right is that they're getting people to focus. They're getting people to focus on police brutality and the disproportionate arrest and treatment of black people.
That's
and what happened in the video is that this group of people, you know, white people, black people, everybody around them that experienced it, they said, these people did nothing wrong. You stopped them for no reason. You have them standing here 30 minutes to check on something that you know they didn't do. This man is 71 years old. You know, they're trying to get him. They're telling you they're trying to get their father home and he did nothing wrong. Why are you have them standing here for 30 minutes? And this whole group outside with, you know, 10, 15 police officers, and they're all, you know, together focused on getting these black people out of there because they know that it could have went a completely different way if they weren't there. So I think that that's one good thing that's come from, you know, Black Lives. Ever since I think it started in 2013, right, with George Zimmerman being acquitted and
Michael Brown.
Right. And ever since then, I think that even though it's terrible that it's happened every year, you know, since then, that they've been able to effectively come back around and saying Black Lives Matter every year. And it's gotten people to focus. And this time, like somebody said, with everybody being home from their jobs and pandemics happening in the world, and this video, you know, showing for 8 minutes, you can literally see, everybody can see this is wrong. And everybody's just saying enough is enough. Right.
Yeah.
It's a video people need to watch, but it's so hard to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think what I like seeing now is I drove to the grocery store and witnessed, we're getting ready to do this, so I wanted to get there and come back. And I witnessed a lot of signs that not only said Black Lives Matter, but a lot of them were saying police reform now. And I think that is so important. I think that's, to me, that's the biggest issue, that we're not going to solve systemic racism overnight.
No.
But we can start with the biggest purveyor of it, which I think is the way the police are trained and the way they act. Because like my nephew, he's been pulled over like quite a few times for driving on a suspended license. Not once has he ever gone to jail, right? You're supposed to go to jail and have your car impounded, no questions asked. Not once. Every single time they said, I'm going to go around this corner. I don't want to see you driving, but I don't want to see your car here. You know what I mean? So he just goes straight home. That's not, I appreciate them doing that for my nephew because I feel like I won the lottery. I'm white, middle-aged man in America, I get a lot of those benefits. And as a person, how do you not take advantage of that? I take advantage of it, not even trying
to do it. You even know you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a cop, I got pulled over on New Year's Eve for going 10 miles over the speed limit. I said, do you want my insurance? He said, no, I trust you.
What do you think would have happened if it was one of you guys?
It's
crazy.
It would not have gone like that.
Have the talk, right? When you hear people talk about the talk that black people have with their kids when mm-hmm. they get their driver's license, I'll never have to worry about that. And that's nuts.
Man, the one time that I've been to jail was because of a suspended driver's license. I was driving actually through the Alamance County where I live now. And I had my mom had already told me, because we live in Hillsboro, which is a county down. And she was like, you know, Orange County and Alamance County are, you know, they got some racist people around there.
And no games.
But I got pulled over by the cop. My wife was asleep in the passenger seat. And I had this green Lexus with these rims on it. And I knew, I got pulled over. And, but it was a black cop. It was a black cop. He pulled us over and he was like, man, your license is suspended, such and such. You know what? And he was going to let me go. But as soon as I got back in the car, he put his lights back on, pulled me back over and took me to jail. I was like, dang. You know, the first and only time I ever been to jail was over that.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, though. And you guys tell me from experience, is a black cop, can they tend to be worse towards a black driver, or can they be better off? They're like, if you get, because I've had Dave in the car when I've gotten just warnings for not having my seatbelt on, and the worry on his face is like, I'm like, dude, I get my license out. I don't even care. You know what I mean? He's like freaking out.
In my experience, I can say for me, I've worked with black police officers. I've trained with black police officers and white. I mean, like in the military, when I was deployed to Iraq, I went with the military police unit, and you know they were all from New York, so it was mostly white guys and women, but you know it was diverse for you know police unit. But even you know, in my churches, I've had black police officers, and I, the place where I work now, the captain and the lieutenant are black. So I'll say that for me, I think it might be more because I know them, you know, and they know me. But if I were, like I have a personal relationship with these people. And I think that, you know, we really should do more. And it's hard, you know, because the black community already has a mistrust for the cops, for police. So it's hard to kind of bridge that gap between, you know, us and the police. You don't want to just introduce yourself to the cops. You would never want to do that. But like I said, my pastor is an ex-cop. We're doing a peace march with them, you know, tomorrow with the Sheriff's County tomorrow down here. So I think it's necessary because one thing I've always learned is that, you know, racism doesn't survive contact very well. And it's a shame that it has to be like this, but if you were to talk to a racist person as a human being, before I knew certain people were racist that I went to school with, you know, they just seemed like regular people. And right. I've been told several times, and it's very scary, that, oh man, I was racist until I met you. You know, I didn't like black people until I met you. Like living in Orange County. And, you know, it's like it's a compliment, I guess.
Right.
But
kind of. But yeah,
it's the scary. It's the scariest compliment. It's the scariest compliment I think I've ever been given on multiple occasions. Well,
you're right there, because contact, it's hard. People hate what they don't know. Right. Like people hate what they're not around. Like people who are very much, you know, hate gay people don't know people who are gay. And once they once that it comes into their life, typically their views will change. Yeah. And it's the same thing with like any kind of race or anything. It's like, if people just, for lack of a term, fucking talk to each other, we could get through this a lot faster, a lot easier. People just don't want to talk. They want to just argue and yell, and that's not helping. Well, people talk to each other and it'll get better. You know, it's a start at least.
I think Morgan hit it on the spot though, when he said that the issue is when it becomes political, it changes everything. And it's not about the race. And it really should just be about us getting, this is why I wanted to get us together, because I think it's important for people to see us talking and having a conversation about things and not sitting there, you know,
blaming each other for things when it's like, the past is the past. What do we need to do to move forward now? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that, I am very, 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 very much so that type of person that I don't like to sit and look at a problem and not try to figure out what the solution is. Like us sitting here arguing about what the problem is and who the F cares about that? How are we going to fit? You can argue for 10 years and not fix anything. What I need is, it's very similar to, and I'll go back to what I think I was answering, what Black Lives Matter was. I felt like they did wrong. I don't know that they did it wrong as much as it's something that I believe could have been done differently.
Yeah.
But I'll get back to that in a second. Like one of the things that I think, when it comes to us talking about conversation and how important it is, like I love the points that y'all just brought up, because it's definitely, like I said, it really does just really come down to contact, conversation. I do think one of the things that I've seen the most of, and again, it's still due to politics in a lot of cases, is that people, they don't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable for one. But at the same time, they don't want to educate themselves on what it is. It doesn't matter if I tell you something that's a fact, if you're not going to listen to it.
Right.
And past you not listening to it, you're not going to look it up for yourself, because it's not because you don't want your mind to change. Like, you know what I'm saying? And that's what, like, I think one of the things, when I did the video, I gave like three, I think it was four at the time, but I whittled it down to three things. I think if everybody does them, I know that we can change things in a major way this year. And you have to be willing to both have the conversation, but also educate yourself. If you're not going to, because I mean, at this point in 2020, I think that's why people are fed up. It's like, yo, it's 2020 and we're still having the same conversation we were having in the 60s.
Yeah.
Wow. Black people getting their A's whooped in the streets. You know what I'm saying? Like that, in order for anybody to pay attention, and I've said this before and I said it on the video, peaceful protests don't work. Now, what I mean by that is, one thing that I've seen in conversation that pissed me off every time I saw it is when people use Martin Luther King as like the beacon of light, but don't want to take him in totality. So right. Like if you're given the I Have a Dream speech, everybody wants to stay on the dream, because if you stay on the dream part, then there's no work involved. You missed the first 5 minutes when he said, we're going to boycott these companies if they don't stand with us on this and that and whatever. If you're not, but like, if you're not willing to, in 2020, realize that, like, if you go back to the 60s, them peacefully walking places didn't change anything. The bus boycotts worked because they took money out of the bus system.
Yeah.
if they hadn't have boycotted by not riding the bus, it would not have worked.
Got a friend in some
way. Exactly. If they were walking in the streets and the cops didn't brutalize them for walking in the streets and regular citizens, and it was not broadcasted internationally, it wouldn't have changed anything. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because that stuff had been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And there were no changes.
Are misguided in thinking that you're referring to the looting and the breaking of stores. You're like, no. This isn't anything to do with that. But when you talk about the looting, those first couple days and people getting into that, there's a part of me that understands when you're oppressed and pushed, it's like a rubber band, you know? And as fully feel the tension go, it's going to spring back. And if you're in the way, it flipping hurts. You know what I mean? And I see where that can happen. I don't know that I agree with some of the things that people did, but at the same time, I can understand the reaction.
The rioting and looting conversation is when it turns to a certain point, and this is another thing that I talked to a friend about recently. Some of it, you're always going to have opportunistic people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all it was. There were some people that were opportunistic. There were some people that were, there were some, you're always going to have people that are opportunistic, but you're also going to have people that are pissed and like, you know what? F this, whatever. But in American history, again, that's why I think it's very important to educate yourself on the issues. So, because if you educate yourself on it, you cannot possibly stay in the same viewpoint without you choosing to do that. Right. And that's where I have issue. Danny knows this. Willful ignorance is one of my biggest pet peeves. I can't stand that crap.
Yeah.
If you're going to choose, because honestly, if you're choosing to be willfully ignorant concerning almost anything, it's almost 99% of the time it's because you want to do something evil and keep yourself in that space for evil. You don't want to see another side because that makes you change outside of what it is going to take for you to use your morals or the God that you say you believe in or whatever. So when it comes to the rioting and looting, it's the same as it always had been. You have opportunistic people. You have people that were literally there just to cause anarchy, to take away from that conversation and right. what they were actually marching for. Because one of the things that I kept trying to make sure that I posted on my page was, okay, we know there's people, we see people in there still in Jordans and stuff like that. Number one, don't show just the black people still in those Jordans, because right. there are white people in there still in those Jordans too, and breaking into Target and all, like, because nope. what happened in the,
They showed mostly white people coming up in their cars and their trucks and dropping off bricks.
Yeah. One of the things that really helps in this time period is because we have so many cameras. Everybody has a camera. There's cameras all over stores. But if this had happened 30 years ago, this narrative would be completely different and able to stop listening.
You would
not have a counter narrative. The only narrative would have been these people are savages. They're animals. They deserve to be treated like that, but there's no counter. So if you had to say white supremacists are literally making groups online to say that they're Antifa and incite violence, or to show up to make sure that they incite violence, or to try to gird people or whatever, nobody would have believed that until you actually had evidence where the FBI is saying, yeah, that's a thing. Or like in Minnesota, in Minnesota, it was like 2 days into the protest. All of the people that they arrested 80 people that night, all of them were from out of state. Would that have been something that was reported before 20, 30 years? No, absolutely not.
Not even 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So that's one of the reasons why when it comes to the rioting and looting, like I made the analogy that, all right, so concerning the rioting and looting, the majority of protest period across the country had been peaceful. So you had a small group of people, whether they were actors, people that came in to try to incite whatever, you had a small group of people that were, like, let's say there's 1,000 of them, 100 of them are doing that stuff, right? We don't want to lose the protest and what they're protesting for based on what those few do. In the same way that when these police brutality cases happen, the common thing that always comes back to is we know that they're mostly good cops.
Yeah.
There's a few bad apples that we need to weed out, and we can't throw out all of the cops, so we can't vilify all of the cops based on what a few do. But when it comes to this narrative, that's what's happening. So you're going to tell us that we should calm down and just go back with the status quo with cops because there's only a few bad apples.
Yeah.
But then with the riot, you want to change the entire narrative, though it's only a few of them too. You see what I'm saying?
Let me jump in real quick.
I feel like Dan got something to say.
Let me jump in real quick. So you were talking, I agree with you, Morgan, about the peaceful protest, but I disagree with you. So I think the point of a peaceful protest is to get people to come together. We've seen every image that you see from the peace walks and the marches for change are large groups of people, right? Like you said, you can't. A peaceful protest isn't going to incite instant action, but it is an opportunity to educate people. Like my pastor was talking about, tomorrow when we go out there, we're going to get people there, but then you have a captive audience. You have an audience that you can tell people what to do. You can tell them who we're supposed to be voting for in this upcoming election. You can say, these are the people that you need to go to. This police officer, if you have an issue, call this police officer right here. He's here to help you. You got a captive audience to say, this is what we need to be doing, especially when you got leaders like MLK and people in our community. So those are good things that peaceful protests can do. And that's just something. And that's also something that everybody can do. Everybody's not going to boycott Chick-fil-A or, you know, it just ain't going to happen.
Right.
You know, when you say I agree with you when you say, you know, hit people in their pockets. But everybody's not going to boycott the bus system. People need to get on the bus to go to work. Everybody's not going to boycott, you know, factories or Ford or whatever company it is. Because if you give me a good enough deal, I'm trying to get in there. I'm trying to make it happen. Just like you were saying with the looters, I'm not going to condemn looters. I wouldn't do it because I'm in a position now where I don't need to do that. I have stuff, you know, but the society that we live in has made it so important to have things. It has made it so important that money is so necessary for people to live that they are willing to run in somebody else's business and take stuff and burn down stuff so that there's no evidence left over. They're willing to run into a Target and take bags of Skittles just to feel like they have something. And that's a societal problem that we have when people are looking for any opportunity to take anything that they can. And you know, ever since the Boston Tea Party, people have been destroying things, and that has caused change. So we can't say that it's not necessary for, you know, people to loot. If we see that historically, that's what causes things to change. If you say every time there was a revolution or any time that there was a riot, a law got changed like that. You see these people rioting. Now the NFL is apologizing. Dang on. You got Tommy Lauren saying Black Lives Matter. Who would have ever thought that? Like,
she really did. She did.
I don't know. I don't know if she did.
I was gonna say Tommy Lauren said, "Holy shit!"
I don't know if she did. I don't know if she did. But I know the NFL apologized, and that's a big step.
Yeah. It's a huge step.
Yeah. No, but we don't disagree on that. We agree. Like I would not loot and burn crap. I wouldn't do that, and I disagree with it. Like I'm on record on my page and video and everywhere else saying I'm not for that. And honestly, like I reported when I shared it on my page when like there were people that broke into the Apple store and the stuff that they were stealing. They reported and said, and they knew where that stuff was because they had tracking devices on it. Mm-hmm. And I posted it like, yes. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're going to take it, there's always going to be opportunists. But if you're going to take the opportunity, and that's another thing I'm glad that people have video of it. There's always going to be opportunists. But one of the things that I love seeing a lot was that I saw white people, black people, Hispanic people that were going to those businesses. And when people were getting ready to try to riot and loot, they were like, nah, you're not doing that here. Right. It's not even their business. You see what I'm saying? And the reason they were doing that, one, is because they had a moral obligation to. But the second reason is because we're not about to let you and your ignorance right now steal the narrative for what it is that we're getting ready to stand for. Yep. We're not going to let you do that. And like as a whole, some of the things that mean the most to me that I'm seeing right now is the fact that people are waking up to being open in their hearts to be like, okay, maybe there really is something to this. Now, you can't have an attitude with people, and I explained this when I did the live video. Privilege and privilege in this country is not designed to be seen. It's designed literally for nobody to see it. Like, and that changed after the civil rights movement. Because during the civil rights movement, if you're out in the street, like you know, my I still call her my mother-in-law, though me and my ex have gotten a divorce. Cause I like, she's like a mom to me, but she's told me about stories where when she was growing up, she was walking down the sidewalk and didn't step off the sidewalk for a white woman that was coming the same way. And the white woman smacked her in the face. She was like nine. You know what I'm saying? She smacked her in the face for not stepping off the sidewalk, and nobody did anything. Cause you couldn't in this time period. You see what I'm saying? You couldn't do that. The it was different. Or if we were protesting back then in the '60s, again, you got to remember every time that these riots and protests and stuff happened back in that time period, black people were getting their A's whooped, and they knew they were going to get their A's whooped, but they knew they couldn't. If they fought back, it changed the narrative, which is crazy, yeah. But that's what it was. So that's how the sit-ins worked. The whole sit-in was literally designed to say, you're going to get brutalized. You got to take it. You can't fight back. If you fight back, it's going to change how people see it. Because again, the thought process is the audacity for you to fight back. And that same thought process is still here now. But the thing that encourages me the most is that the people that are responding right now, like, remember how I was talking about how things get political and stuff. The older you get, the more susceptible you are to that nonsense. But younger people, the people that are out here marching and pissed and have the signs, white, black, and everything else and indifferent, are the younger generation, because they're like, that was effed up and we're going to stop that crap right now. And the reason they're able to do that is because it's not political for them. It's literally just right and wong. That was effed up. We're going to change it. Exactly. The rest of it doesn't matter. All the rest of it is irrelevant. That was effed up. This is effed up. We're not doing that. And right now you're seeing a power struggle between the older generation that's used to the overt, you know what I'm saying? And they were fine with making it into covert racism and putting it into, you know, redlining, gentrification. Right. You know, it had to morph. Racism didn't go anywhere. It just morphed into other methods, which, you know, I've spoken about before. But because at this point, it's not cool to be overtly racist. If you were to call somebody the N-word anywhere, number one, two things have changed. One, I don't know how Danny react, but if somebody called me the N-word to my face, hey, let's see what's up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's do it. You know what I'm saying? If that's how you feel, okay, well, let's fight about it and we'll see what happens.
Let me ask you an uncomfortable question when it comes to the N-word. How do you feel about it being in all the music and the movies and being okay amongst you and Danny, but then it has a completely different, and understandably so, it has a different connotation when it's coming out of the mouth of a white guy, which is completely understandable, but having it prevalent in the culture for so long and continually to be used, has that been a hindrance, or do you think that that's just the way it's always going to be?
I'll be completely honest with you. I got white friends who know the then like the balance that they need to use. Like, I don't have a problem with it in music and in TV and stuff like that. I have a problem with people that I don't know using it. And that's just honesty for me. I have a problem with people that I don't know using it because I don't know you and I don't know your intentions. You know?
As I said, they come down, you don't know their intent of what they're saying about it. So yeah, it's different.
Me personally, Ta-Nehisi Coates did a, I don't know if you guys know who that is, but he wrote the book Between the World and Me. He also did, what's the name of that book? He just did his fictional work.
Blood and Waters? Water, something with the waters?
No, I'll think of it later, but Tom. And he also did, I think he did a series of Black Panther too here recently, last three years. But he was asked that question in an auditorium when he was talking about the book. And
The Water Dance.
That book is awesome. If you haven't read it, it's really good. But his answer, I agree with a lot, which is, I think it's funny that there is, it hits on more than one chord. I think it's funny that it is wanted to be used by the white community in sections. Because when I grew up,
everybody wants to use that word.
True. But it's because of the culture that we've created and turned it from being a derogatory term into something of a term of endearment. And I love that we were able to accomplish that, you know what I'm saying, use it in the culture. But again, what Ta-Nehisi Coates was saying, like, he made a good comparison and said, like, when his wife and them get together and they're like, what's up, B? You know what I'm saying? They'll call themselves B among their own conversation. That doesn't make him be like, yeah, I see you, B. Yes, queen. You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't make him want to then come into the conversation and use that same lingo that they're using. That's their lingo. It's cool for them to use that. But if he tries to come into it, it's going to have the same reaction as a white person's coming into the black culture. And again, like what Danny said is true. Like, if somebody that you don't know says it, yeah, you don't know what their intent is, and that's definitely going to make it more problematic. But again, I think the bigger question is why you would want to, outside of the fact that we made it cool in the culture,
Right.
Like, I'm not the type of guy that, like, if I think it still is relative to if you know that person or not. Like, if we were all together and we were rapping Jay-Z's Still N-Word, you know what I'm saying? If we were rapping that song and y'all said it out loud, I'm not going to look at Kendrick and John and be like, don't say that again. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not that reactionary where, like, I'm not that reactionary. But I do know, I do have friends that would be like,
yeah, what are you doing?
You know what I'm saying? Like,
if Derek were there, there would be a fight.
I have a 17-year-old son, right? And he's big into hip hop. Listens to tons of hip hop, right?
Yeah.
And all the new rappers, like Juice WRLD and all those. I can't think of all the names. He said, I listen to him sometimes too, but I'm not a fan of like Juice WRLD and 6ix9ine, but he listens to him. And, you know, he's a 17-year-old white kid, and he's listened to rap or hip hop for like 5-6 years now. And it took a long time for me to get him to understand, like, it's, you know, listen to it. It's great. Hip hop is great, but these certain things you can't say in front of people, and you got to understand why. And it took me forever to figure out for him to understand why he couldn't say that.
Listen, everybody knows people are saying the word in their homes. Like when you listen to music, there's stuff that I'll say, you know, in my car that I'm not going to say at work. So we know that people, you know, are doing that. But just like you said, just as long as you make sure your son knows that when he goes out in public,
you can't say it in the wrong crowd.
You cannot say that.
It would be like I can almost verbatim say the lines from Training Day when Alonzo was, he said, you want to go to jail, you want to go home. Like, I know, like, I love that scene. Like, I could say it from front to back. And I know white people, that I have white friends and brothers and sisters that love that scene too. But if you start recounting that scene and then be like, shoot program, you know what I'm saying, or whatever, all your black friends are gonna be like, word. You're like, word, that's how you feel? Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Because of this whole conversation that we're having right now, this is a good one actually. What did you guys think of the Kendrick Lamar section when he brought the white girl up on stage singing a song that has the word in it? She sat in her room singing in front of the mirror, just singing the lyrics like anybody would do. And then he pulls her up and then she says the word and he freaks out on her. And then she did it again. And I don't think it was all subconscious to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It felt really bad for both of them. I thought it was a bad situation, but what was your guys' reaction?
That was a teaching moment. Like, again, when you have cameras there, because they're just like you said, there are people who really don't know, like, especially young people. They really don't know the power of the word. They don't know the history of it. They don't know why not to use it. So that's a teaching moment. That's a moment that millions of people learn. Millions of young people really learn. Oh, I don't need to be saying this word, you know, all willy nilly. I don't need to just be slinging out N-word. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
I don't need to be doing that because it's not a good look.
Just swing from the hip. But I can see why people felt like Kendrick. I can see why people felt like Kendrick was setting her up.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he necessarily was, because he more than likely he probably expected her to censor herself.
Yeah.
Due to where they were. You know what I'm saying? Like,
like he could have chose a different audience member or even a different song section to do that in that doesn't have that type of lyric in it. Because it you could tell she was just getting into it. You know what I mean?
And that's why I think he brought her up there. I mean, he probably, or somebody saw in the crowd that she was really into the music. Like, and he was like, yo, she's really vibing. She knows the music. Yeah. So let's bring her up on stage.
Yeah.
And it all just went wrong.
Kendrick is a very cerebral rapper. So
thank you. No, I'm kidding.
Kendrick, not Kenrick.
Kendrick, I gotta hear your mixtape, Uncle Kendrick.
So I can see it either way. I can see him doing it as an experiment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And he loves to teach in his music or to make sure he inflects ideas, especially of identity. So I can see him doing it and being a teaching moment. Like, I don't think he was like if they talk after this concert, I don't think he'd be like, you're a racist. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he would have had that conversation with her. It would have been like, yo, that's not cool. You might want to watch how you, the same conversation we're having now is the same conversation I'm sure he would have had with her. Because again, like Danny said, everybody doesn't have the one of the issues in the country right now for why race is still an issue is because people don't know the history. If you knew the history, and even for those who know, we know revisionist history about all of it. If you knew the actual history, if you watched the videos, if you go back to watching the civil rights movement, you will be just as morally hurt as you were watching George Floyd be killed on screen. You will be hurt again because you've seen in Selma when John Lewis got his head busted open. Like, that was live. You know what I'm saying? On TV. His head, he was bleeding on the sidewalk on TV. There were women getting their A's whooped by billy clubs, getting bitten by dogs, fire hose toes, and that was live. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there was brutality live for everybody to see. And that same brutality is very similar to what Will Smith said. It's not that racism has gotten worse, it's that it's getting filmed. The only reason the civil rights movement worked is because it was filmed. If there were no video cameras, we'd still be in we know we're still fighting something, but it'd still be a whole different level of something, right, at this point, because the country as a whole would not have moved from its mindset. Like, a lot of times in America, I've said this, and again, people could look at it historically and see if I'm lying, but there's not been any legislation change, which is another reason, which I'm sure we'll get to that. There's never been a legislation change for African Americans in this country that was not preceded by violence or profit motive. It's never happened, not one time. So that's the reason why I said before.
Thing to do, and then as soon as they do it, boom, either like some kind of protest, some kind of riot, some kind of violent act has happened.
Correct. But there won't be any change. There will be no legislative change unless there was. America made the move that they did for the Civil Rights Act because they were shamed internationally to do that. Yeah. If there were no video cameras to record it and show the entire world what was happening, it would not have had the effect that it did, because it's not like Americans weren't aware that that was already happening.
Right.
We had seen the Chicago race riots. Tulsa, Oklahoma was covered up, even though it was in the 20s, that was covered up. But literally a whole community burned to the ground. 300 people died. There were postcards. Like, you got to remember, in this time period, up into the 60s, there were postcards sent to each other from with a lynching on it. People still have postcards of Tulsa, Oklahoma burned to the ground, and they send it to each other for Christmas. You know what I'm saying? The stuff like that. Like, that's a real thing, but people don't know that because they don't know the history of it. So, like I said, you know the revisionist history. So when you think about the civil rights movement, you see MLK and you hear the dream. I have a dream that one day, and it stays right there. It doesn't stay in what do we do to get to one day. That's not the conversation that needs to be had. It's a kick it down the can. Right. Kick the can down the road. That's the American way has always been concerning race. Kick the can down the road. Somebody else will do it.
That's the next.
And the thing that is blessing me the most right now is the fact that it's the generate, because the last time something changed was when the young people got involved. When hippies and black people came together to say, hey, we're going to fight this together, that's when the civil rights movement happened.
And again, I think that it's very important, like we were talking about, to have contact. And I think, I don't know why this thought just jumped into my mind, but I think we got five senses. Some of us have six, I guess. I think that the more senses you get, I think the more senses that you get involved, the closer you get to a situation. So if we can see, like if we were just reading on a piece of paper that something happened, it might not, you know, affect us as much. You know, of course you can get into, you know, stories that you read, but if you are seeing and hearing a video, you know, it's even more impactful. If you sit and watching a video, it's more impactful. But if you are literally out there on the street, seeing it, hearing it, feeling it, touching it, tasting it, smelling it, if you're smelling the tear gas that's coming around you and you're seeing the cops are pushing 75-year-old men down on the street,
so bad,
you know, and you are literally there, that's something that is going to affect you as a human being. So it's not something that, you know, the closer that you get to it, the more it's affecting people. And that's why, you know, we are where we are now. I mean, we see, you know, Colin Kaepernick, I think all of it just came together at this perfect moment. This man was kneeling on this man's neck, and Colin Kaepernick was kneeling on the sidelines, you know, two seasons ago. Yeah. And it's like,
Colin Kaepernick, man, pissed me off so much. Not him kneeling, but people's reaction to it. And it's un-American. I'm like, he's doing the most American thing you can do. Are you kidding? You fought, especially the old men, veterans that were like, I fought for my country, people. And it's like, you fought for his rights. You fought for
the right to do that.
For this kind of injustice. And you guys are mad about it. It makes no sense.
But you have to remember, the people that were upset in that moment are the ones that, in his mind, he was not fighting for his right to do that. Right. He was fighting for Michigan's right to do what they did. You know what I'm saying? We want you to open the country back up. We're going to bring our assault rifles and no mask. We're going to push you guys. We're going to keep you from getting together to change anything. Again, it's okay for them to do that. That's whose rights he was fighting for it to do. But again, if African-Americans, like, I think somebody said this on the news the other night, if African-Americans across the board said, you know what, we're all going to apply for our gun licenses.
Right.
And there was a spike to the point that it became a federal level, like, yo, there's a lot of people buying, there's a lot of black people buying guns right now.
Oh, it's
I promise you,
all legal.
I promise you, there will be legislation change. You know what I'm saying? I'm not even saying that to be funny. Like, I'm being serious.
Yeah.
Like, the same people that will fight, that were upset about the flag situation and say, you're disrespecting my grandfather, you're disrespecting my whatever, whatever. As an African-American, I can look at it and say, no, you disrespecting my grandfather. You're disrespecting my great-grandfather. You're disrespecting my great-great-grandfather. We fought in all those wars. We fought in all those wars for us to have the right to take that knee. So you're telling me I'm more wrong because we fought and then when we got back, we're beating the ish out of, or we couldn't get access to the GI Bill. We couldn't get access to we still could. When African-Americans came back from World War II, when they came back from Vietnam, it doesn't matter what war it is, there were African Americans that fought in all of it, but when they came back, they were still treated exactly the same as they were before they left. Nothing had changed. They didn't have access to capital, they didn't have access to jobs, they didn't have access to any of that stuff. So it was disrespectful on the other side for African Americans that have, like me, I have family members that have been in the military for 2-3 generations, police officers, 2-3 generations. So it's not. The thought process for that group is, no, my people did this and they're only thinking about their people, both for their benefit and them doing it, and they exclude the fact that African-Americans have been in literally every war. There's not been one war that Americans ever fought that African-Americans weren't in. The first person to die in the Boston Tea Party, Chris Posadas. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter where you look in American history, black people were there and we were fighting whether it benefited us or not, and it never did. It never benefited us. So, you know what I'm saying? Like,
the benefit in some way is the Civil War, but even that,
exactly. You know what I'm saying? There's never been a point where it benefited us, because even after the Civil War, when you start with Reconstruction, you promised 40 acres and a mule, and a year later, nope. You know what I'm saying? Not only did they take the land and take your money, but then they came back and made you slaves again. You know what I'm saying?
Like, took your mule.
They made you slaves again. Then once they made you slaves again, then they changed into sharecropping, and sharecropping is pretty much slavery. You know what I'm saying?
Then here comes the 13th Amendment.
Exactly. then here comes the prison. Here comes the prison pipe. The prison pipeline. Here comes the need for the civil rights movement. Like, if you know history, it changes all of that.
Can you explain what you mean by the prison pipeline?
So,
I hope y'all got enough. I hope y'all got enough video.
Plenty of tape for this. You got plenty of tape.
So there's still a debate about whether or not the school to prison pipeline exists. It's federal. I mean, if you look at the statistics, you can Google it. There are books. There are great books about it, and it's federal statistics everywhere. But one of the things that, to surmise it closely, if you've heard of redlining and gentrification, those two things, if you think about it right now, even in 2020, America's still segregated. The only way that that's possible is that, like, the only reason gentrification is possible is the only reason, you know, gentrification is a racial thing is the fact that it always happens to the same group. You know what I'm saying? So if it wasn't racial, then it would be impossible for it to always be black people that are getting displaced from the city and having to go move and live somewhere else. But redlining was a practice that was largely done again after the World War, that you draw the map of lending based on where black people were. Like they were, I think there were five different grades and there were five different colors that they would use to draw around neighborhoods to say whether it was a good neighborhood to build in, a bad neighborhood, whatever. And if there was somebody black in a neighborhood, red. You know what I'm saying? Right. So that was one of the quickest ways to segregate the country and make sure there were no white people living where black people were or whatever.
And then here comes the decision that schools are going to be funded by, you know, mm-hmm.
The income level.
Yeah. Then that goes to, you know, the minority kids aren't as educated, so they're more likely to get into crime. They're more likely to get in crime, and then they're going to be sentenced harder in the prison system to be in for the exact same crimes, and they're going to spend longer in prison. And then because of the 13th Amendment, the prison system is pretty much slavery. So from school, you don't learn in school, you get out into society, you're not equipped to work in society. And even especially if you're not, if you don't move away from your neighborhood, you're more likely to go to prison because you have guns and drugs shipped into your community, and then to prison you go. And then you got people like my guy in the Kids for Cash scandal, who literally is selling kids to prisons. So
private prisons, you gotta make sure you
specify. Oh yeah, and then the privatization of prisons, yes, also.
Prisons should not be privatized. That is such bullshit.
Right.
I agree. But when it comes to the school to prison pipeline, again, I was laying the groundwork for redlining and gentrification to show how that gets made. Because if you don't have things segregated to know who to target, because again, we know that another statistic that you can look up is that white people and black people use and sell drugs. Both, it's not just use, it's just selling at right. The exact same rate, if not higher, for white Americans than it is for black Americans. Sure. But we are good. One in three black men are going to end up in prison at some point in time in their life. The majority of that is because of where the police actually patrol. And then even if you do patrol, then it's access to capital. And because African-Americans, there were no reparations. There's definitely no generational wealth that was allowed to be built at post-Civil War. Because again, after the Great Depression, all of the programs that were used to jumpstart the economy, to make the middle class, to make the higher class, and to bring things back, African-Americans didn't have access to. So again, it's another place to make sure that things stay segregated. But then you also have white flight, that if you are African-American that makes enough money to live in a community with a white family, black people's presence in that community meant that the property value is going to go down, and white people would literally leave. Like the race riots in Detroit were because of that. It was because of black people getting jobs in the same places as white people, and because of black people moving into places where white people were, and white people weren't having it, so they moved out. That's how the suburbs even became a thing, and that's how the ghettos became a thing. So
crazy.
And it's still recycling now, but then the pipeline is, again, like, because your income level, because your schools and the resources for your schools are based on income level, if we segregate all the black people here, the jobs have moved out, and you have poorer people there, then they have worse schools. And if they have worse schools, then they're going to be criminalized. And once they get criminalized, you end up in the prison system. So
getting out of that system is just near impossible.
It's impossible, because if you go to prison, when you get out, you don't have access to Pell Grants. You don't have access to any grants. Matter of fact, you barely have access.
Might not be able to vote. You might not be able to get a job. Yeah.
You pretty much literally
at the Waffle House.
You have the scarlet letter, like in real life. You know what I'm saying? Like if you go to and the majority of the time that you went to prison, over 50, I think it might be close to 60% of the people in prison, period, are there for nonviolent drug offenses.
Yeah.
So, and again, the reason that it's a problem is because it's disproportionately doled out again, because we know, but a lot of that is all, it's not just like there could be 100 white people to come into court and 100 black people to come into court. The difference is the wealth gap in the country is so huge, it's so vast, that even if you do come into court and you have 100 white people, 100 black people by and large, period, if they get into a court issue, can't pay a lawyer to
do anything. There's no idea what's going on.
So you're relying on a public defender. That public defender has 10 to 15 cases. And the public defenders at this point work with the DAs and just be like, all right, let's get this case over with. And 95% of cases that come into the criminal justice system are plea bargained out. Why? Because you can't afford representation. And they're going to push you to make sure that you take a deal just to make everybody's job easier.
Yeah.
Which there's also a debate right now about whether or not that's violating your civil rights to actually have a fair trial. Because if everybody was, if everybody stuck to their gun to say, no, I'm going to wait for my trial, then
the justice system will collapse.
Yeah, it will break immediately. Yeah. And you know that just looking at the number, if 95% of the cases, 95, you know what I'm saying, are plea bargained out, that's insane. I mean, that's
so many.
Yeah, that's insane. You know what I mean? So, and that's what I was talking about before, where I was saying if you look into the history of what's happened, the picture's very clearly painted. It's just a matter of whether or not you're gonna, and I can't even say do the work, because there's videos on it, there's audio books, there's all kinds of ways for you to get the information. It's very similar to the conversation I've had about Christianity and people choosing what they want to follow concerning what Jesus said, and then feeling like you're gonna have an out or something later. Like, how? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you, the information is at your fingertips, literally. Like, literally, people used to travel whole countries to go to a library to read one book, and you have, you know, scores. Exactly. You have literal scores of information at your fingertips, literally, and you still, you know, don't want to learn anything. And again, like I said, willful ignorance irritates me, because you would rather hate somebody and stay in that place of hate than educate yourself to try to move out of that place of hate.
Yeah.
That's what irritates me about it.
Let me ask you this. Who's
beeping? Is that me?
I don't know. That was my fault. It was my fault.
No, no worries. What is the difference what happened in 1991 with Rodney King and what's happening right now with Floyd? Because Rodney King was huge for like a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You had the LA riots that went across, and you had riots every, you know, little spurts of protests here and there, but nothing organized like today.
I can answer that from my point of view.
I know what you're going to say, and you're right. Go ahead, John.
I'll say this. Well, one, people like me grew up watched that back then and grew up seeing it being wrong. And now it's like, there's way more coverage now. So people like me who grew up with that are now in their late 30s, early 40s, are like, no, this is wrong. And they stand up and they make the organization, they do it. Because we see that shit, because it was on TV and it was everywhere. I mean, I grew up in a very, very white area, right? My high school had 6 black people in it. 4 of them were related. Wow. Brothers and sisters. Okay.
That's it. Of course they were. Of course they were related. Right?
But you know, I also grew up I'm also in a very liberal state. So even though we only had 6 black people in our school,
have to be where we are geographically.
Yeah. So geographically, in you know, Western Washington, people don't care. It's like you are what you are for the most part. And there's obviously sects of people who are racist everywhere, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's whatever. My parents growing up were very much like, you know, you judge people on who they are and their actions, not on the color of skin or whatever. And that's how I grew up. But then, like, you see that shit on the TV I was at 91, I was 9 years old. So I saw that, and, you know, my dad and I had a conversation about that. And I think a lot of the times, you know, you have people coming from the civil rights movement, like my parents, you know, and then they grow up and they have kids, and then the conversation changes over generations, you know, in the white community or whatever, the non-minority community, where people are like, no, this is wrong. And then they grow up and the kid's like, no, this is wrong. And then it just keeps going. So the reaction to it gets bigger in all communities. And I think we're getting to where it's becoming I was going to mention this earlier, you know, like there's a lot of like companies now doing the Black Lives Matter. Like if you look at your Amazon Fire, first thing you see is Black Lives Matter. Amazon supports this. You've got Target coming out basically saying, don't worry about the looting. We got insurance. You know, we stand with you. We stand with the protesters. You've got tons of businesses and people coming out saying, yeah, this is wrong. That wouldn't have happened with the same set of people 30, 40 years ago.
And that's the difference. That's exactly what I was going to say. The difference is now it's not just the black people in LA that are rioting. It's not just, you know, the black people that are in America that's rioting. It's everybody, a part of every community is feeling this and they're joining in it. So with Rodney King, you know, it was just us, and we can't do it by ourselves. It's just not possible. There's not enough of us, and our reach, we don't have the reach that everybody has. So if now, you know, Hasan Minhaj is talking about it, John Stewart is talking about it, you know, and all of their audiences are also talking about it. You got Nike, you got, you know, the NFL, you got everybody saying, all right, enough is enough. And that's really the only difference in between then and now.
It's generational for sure. But I will say also I'm very happy about Target and all those companies coming out and saying what they're saying, but it's still no different than it has been in the past on let's see the actionable part of it, because you can say it. It is a big deal to put that up on your, you know, because you know you're going to alienate a lot of your customers. But still, like, okay, are you going to diversify your boardroom now? Because there's people that are capable of.
Danny's like, who knocked?
there's Morgan disappearing into the background again.
My bad. So there's people that are capable of. There's people that are capable of making those changes within their own communities and within their own companies and having the power to affect change going forward, because it's not going to do us any good to have this time period where everybody's upset and then we don't actually move together to change anything. That will literally just return us back to where we were, which is why what Cameron said earlier, police reform is definitely a thing that has to happen. Voting needs to be a massive movement, especially for the younger people, because like Barack Obama would not have gotten elected without the millennial vote turning out the way it did.
Yeah.
You know, so it's literally impossible. So right now to see millennials, well, the generation that's behind us that are the ones that are standing up across, that's one of the biggest things I love seeing the most is who it is that's out there in the streets. I'm talking about by and large everywhere. And because again, like I said earlier, you're watching a generation that is used to the status quo and wants the status quo against those who have been removed from it by 30 or 40 years, like John just said, that every generation gets less racist because, one, there's more of us in the country that you're going to have to interact with at some point.
Yeah.
There's more books, there's more information, and you literally have to be hiding from racism. You have to be hiding from racism at this point in the country's history to not see it. You know what I'm saying? You might not recognize it when you see it, but you've seen it. You just might not know what to call it. You know what I mean? And that's the thing that I'm really encouraged by with what's happening right now is the right generation is activated. The information's out there. Now it's just a matter of, are we going to be some pansies about it? Or are we like actually going to go change things? One of the biggest points that I want to make sure I get across is that it's very important. It's not enough for you not to be racist. You need to be anti-racist. Calling people out on them being racist or them doing something racist or whatever is how you actually change the system. That's how you do it. Like, it's not just the matter. It's not just shaming them. It's the fact that you shouldn't be spending your money with somebody that you know hates somebody literally based on their skin color. You know what I'm saying? Why are you even friends with this person? If they espouse that and put it out there, but you're remaining friends with them, it says more about you than it does even about them, that you're willing to tolerate it. It's like if you know a guy beats the ish out of his wife, but you're still cool with him, that's not cool. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? At some point, that says more about you than it does your friend that's beating, you know, his wife. So if we stand up to it together, as we've seen happen, and it doesn't move, it has to be like a... it can't be a moment thing. Like, one of the first things that I said is in the three things to change things is that we have to survive the news cycle. The news cycle changes so quickly, especially based on political stuff. We have to survive that. We have to be anti-racist. Don't spend your money with them. Stop associating with them. You know what I'm saying? Because again, why would you want to associate with people that are hateful? And also take it out of the context of being a political issue versus right and wrong. If you know that this group wants equality and this one doesn't, choice is pretty easy. Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it, there's nothing hard about that. It doesn't matter whether that says Democrat or Republican. We're going to change these laws to make things equal. We're not really worried about that. We're going to look into making sure the economy is great. Yeah, but can't you do both? You know what I'm saying? Like, if we've been dealing with this one problem for 400 years and we're still not addressing it, this seems like that's overdue. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, like that's, it's common sense when you look at it, but people don't want to look at it.
Yeah. I have changed my stance on reparations. I think that there should be some kind of disbursement for Black people that have gone through so much in America to get to this point where
there's gotta be a leveling, right?
Yeah. There has to
be some kind of a leveling.
And the only way to do that now is in a monetary value.
Amen.
So
that is one of the hardest conversations to have when it comes to race.
Yeah.
Again, because it's politicized and also because people will say, I didn't do that. So why should I?
It doesn't matter if you didn't do it.
Yeah. But
that's the conversation that people have. You're right. You're completely right. But that's where they get to regress into a hole and say, well, I didn't do it. My grandparents didn't do it. Whatever, whatever. But if you look at
my family never owned slaves, that whole
thing. Right.
But it's not about the person. It's about the way the government and the systemic racism that has happened in America. Not about the
good news. I'll leave y'all with this. I heard something amazing yesterday in a video that a young woman said. She had an analogy where she was talking about Monopoly. She said, if we played 400 rounds of Monopoly and you could not own any property, you could not, as a matter of fact, everything that you owned, I got to have, you know, for 400 rounds. And then for 50 rounds, we said, okay, now you can start to get stuff. And then after that 50 rounds, I took it from you again. I said, okay, this stuff that you worked for is mine now. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm going to burn it all up. And then they said, all right, for the next 50 rounds, now you can actually start playing. There's no way that you can even be a part of the game unless the people who are already in the game share the wealth or there's some type of reparation. Yep. So,
I mean, and the other part that's bad about it is the fact that, and where it goes like more so to an evil level, is the fact that when African Americans made their own communities and stayed to themselves and weren't trying to bother anybody, literally they got burned down every time. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, you can go play your own Monopoly game in your own house, but I'm going to F that up too. You know what I'm saying?
That's mine too. That's mine too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, your own Monopoly, and they were called racist for doing it. You know what I'm saying? Right. So like every other immigrant group that's ever come to this country does that. That's why you have Little China. That's why you have Jewish communities that their money circulates within their community. Every other community is allowed to do it, and they're not called racist or anything else. If a Black person says, "Man, let's say we're going to make a little Wakanda," oh my God, it'll be. It'll be hell to pay. You know what I mean? So that's another thing that makes it so bad. And I mean, reparation discussion is definitely.
That's a big topic.
It's a big topic, man.
Hey, you know what I mean? To wrap this up, because I know that we got people that are needing to go, but I love this conversation. I think it's important to show people that we could have a conversation and have disagreements and agreement and learn from each other. I think that we should do this again. I'd love to do this more often with you guys.
I want to congratulate y'all real quick, man. I've seen that your show has grown. Y'all had freaking Robert Picardo on the show earlier this year, man. I don't know if y'all know Star Trek Voyager was my introduction into Star Trek.
Oh, cool.
And the Doctor's storyline, it just got me so much. Like, I love that him, Data, like all the artificial intelligence, learning about humanity, every one of those storylines has always, you know, hooked me. And Robert Picardo is one of my favorite, you know, that character in that show. And when I saw that he was on your show, I was like, man, these guys are really doing it. Like,
so, on, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, with Nana Visitor, who was a visitor on DS9.
From DS9, and we've gotten lucky, man.
It's not luck. Y'all are working
that's
hard.
Not luck, man.
Y'all been grinding. You deserve every bit of it.
We are grinding.
You've been grinding. You're great, you know, and you're consistent. And as long as you do those things, it's going to happen at some point. So
yeah, we're trying.
We appreciate y'all having us on, man. You know, we're just a little indie comic book company with little mean lumberjacks and good old Ace Blade. So we appreciate y'all having us. Cause he, look at him! Look at Lumberjacks, man. He's mean.
I think he's
concerned. He's concerned.
I think he looks handsome. You know what I mean?
I mean, look at those eyes. Aw.
Well, see, thank you, John.
Let's plan on doing this again because one, we have such a great time talking with each other. I love you guys. I think
we love y'all too, man.
And we love y'all too, bro.
Yeah, man.
Man, last year when you guys did the commercials for the Lumberjack novel, I you know how many times I watched the one to see Morgan doing the... I watched it so many times, man, I couldn't even begin. What are you guys sitting on the toilet? You guys are making fart noises? I lost it. I love those. And I can't wait to see more like that from you guys because, I don't know, I absolutely loved it.
We got some good stuff coming up because Lumberjacks number 2 is coming out later this year. So we got some stuff planned.
You guys, anybody watching needs to check out Fourth Wall Productions. So you can check out Ace Blade, check out Lumberjacks, see what Danny and Morgan has going on because
we'll have links to everything in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll have links to everything on the show because they always have a lot. And hopefully, what do you guys think about maybe doing this like once a month or something? You guys open?
I would love it.
I'm in. Maybe, look, me and Danny are dysfunctional in a way. Like, we were supposed to, like, we do our lives every now and again, but then, like, we kind of, like, it falls off. Most of the Danny,
we just didn't push the button to go live.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's most of the time, it's Danny's fault. Nah, I'm lying. It's not Danny's fault. Like, look, before when we were supposed to get back to doing them, but I was in school, like, constantly. Like, my schedule was crazy. Yeah. But I would love to come on with y'all as much as possible. I mean, y'all know, man, we like y'all family to us. So, I mean, like me and Danny definitely have already said, like, we come to Washington. That's a
you're gonna
Seattle. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll be here.
You're coming and staying with us.
Yeah, awesome. We're completely down.
It's too expensive for us to stay anywhere else. I gotta sleep on y'all stuff out there.
You just might have to
cut. I'll bring a cut.
All right, guys. We'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Ciao.
All right, y'all.
Thanks, guys. It's always a good time with Danny and Morgan, and I hope, as we talked about in there, that we do get to do these more often, you know, once a month or so. It's a lot of fun to have them on and talk about it for, I mean, I feel like if we didn't have things to go do, we'd talk to them forever.
Right. Right. Well, I feel like if they lived in the area or we lived in the area that they're in, we would be hanging out. All four of us would be hanging out.
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Doing stuff. Yeah. It'd be ridiculous.
For sure. For sure. But Morgan talked, you brought up Morgan's video from Facebook, and Morgan actually did a shorter version of that video for YouTube.
Yep.
And Morgan's given us permission to play that for everybody.
Cool. So you're going
to go ahead and
put it right here?
Right here.
Right here.
What's up, everybody? My name is Morgan Iverson, and I've got three basic things that we can start with to do that will help us curb and ultimately curb racism and ultimately reach the goal, I believe, will help us reach the goal of equality in the country if we stick to them. The first thing would be surviving the news cycle. The news cycle drives everything in this country right now. It works really quickly. It goes really quickly. And right now it's cool and it's in and it's everything because it's on the news to talk about this issue and what's happening. The need for police reform, Black Lives Matter, all of the hashtags that are going around right now are going around because it's being covered in the news. But we have to remember that we drive the news, not the news driving us. That was very important that we remember that. So what happened with this case, with all of the cases, with Ahmaud Arbery, with Breonna Taylor, with Floyd, what happened with all of those cases caused people to get upset and caused them to go into the streets. And now the news is covering it nonstop because that's what's going to get the most views. And it's very important that we go past what the views are and we love past the views. We have to love each other enough to want this equality and to continue to do the things that we know that we can do in order to continue to press towards equality. So that's number one. Number two, the number two thing is the most, it's equally as important as the first, if not more important than the first, but it is to stand up to, call out, and disassociate from racism. in all its forms. If you know people that are being racist, if you know people that are posting, there's a whole lot of posts that are going out there that people are posting racist things, they're saying racist things, things that make it seem, we know what racist statements are. If you know somebody that's being racist or whether it's been in their business, in their practice, using their privilege or in whatever ways that they have it to assert their superiority over somebody or to make somebody else feel inferior or work inferiorly to somebody else, that's something that had to be stood up to. The reason it had to be stood up to is the same reason why we are upset about George Floyd. That cop knew, he was told by everybody that was standing there, that were bystanders and the other cops, they knew that George couldn't breathe because he told him he couldn't breathe and he could see that he couldn't breathe. He didn't move, the cops didn't move, nobody did anything. And because they didn't say anything, he's dead today. And it's the same, it could work the same for us. It could be me next, it could be my son next, it could be my daughter next, because we saw the racism. You saw it. You were associated with it. You were around it, patronized it, whatever it was, and you didn't say anything about it. And a lot of times, racism is a bully culture. So it's something that ends up where it wears on you or erodes your natural senses to know that all lives matter, to know that black lives have to matter in order for all lives to matter. But it can erode it that over time because you're taught that, and because you're in that culture, they can then assert those same thoughts over you. Or they might not even assert those thoughts over you, but because you don't speak up, they believe that you do. And because you're in there, it's like birds of a feather flock together. Eventually, that's what it is. And you have to stand up to it. That is of paramount importance. And what I mean by stand up to it is if they're saying it on their Facebook page, screenshot it. Send it to the proper people so that they can't assert that authority over somebody else and continue to perpetuate it. That's the way that we stop it. We have to stand up to it. It's very, very important that we stand up to it. You have to call it out, stand up to it. If they make a racist joke, say something about it. If they put it on your page, say something about it. If they put it on their page, say something about it. But it's very important that we show racism and we show racist that they don't run this country, that we do. Those of us who believe that we are all equal and we all love each other and we all want one world and one great country for each other, it's very important. And it's very imperative that they understand that they don't run this country, that we do. Those of us who believe in we the people, and we the people includes black people. And we appreciate y'all for that. And that's very, very important. The third thing is, I had it on my thing. The third thing is to vote your interest and not your party. It's very important that you vote based on right and wrong and not based on Democrat and Republican. Democrat and Republicans are titles. Your beliefs, your systems, and knowing that somebody else had the same value as you do based on the fact that they are human is what should lead our vote. Whoever's aligning with that is who should get our vote. As simple as that. You shouldn't get a vote because you're a Democrat. You shouldn't get a vote because you're a Republican. You should get a vote based on you saying, I believe in equal rights and I'm going to work to do what it takes to make sure that we are all equal. That's what I'm going to vote for. That's what I'm moving for, and make sure that they understand that that's the only way that they get our vote. If we do those three things and we can stick to it, we'll be able to change this country. That's just a start. There's other things that we can do, and I can make sure I make a video for that.
All right, man. Good stuff.
Yeah. See, there you go. It's fun. Not fun. It's good stuff. It's educational, and it gives some ways to try to help combat what's going on.
It does. It was a really thought out piece. I mean, when Morgan speaks, you listen. When Danny speaks, you listen too. I mean,
just not as much.
That's not what I was trying to say.
Danny's cool though, because he's the one who's like, go under to Danny's TikTok and find
TikTok
Ace Play.
Legend Danny J. Quick.
Right? Oh my God, they're so funny. And then I love they do a lot of short videos on Facebook and YouTube. Like last year, Morgan wrote a book and they did a bunch of commercials that we talked about in the thing.
Oh, dude.
Oh, they're so classic. Good. They're just so dumb. I love it, you know?
It's kind of like what we want to do for this.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit the same thing, but it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but different. Yeah. Little.
But yellow, awesome.
Different.
But awesome.
Different. Yeah.
So, but we'll have links in the show notes to all of Danny and Morgan's stuff over to Fourth Wall Productions, Lumberjacks, and Ace Blade, and check all that stuff out. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And there might be some crossing over happening soon with Fourth Wall and us, so pay attention to that in the interwebs.
Yep. Well, should we just announce it? I mean, you don't want to announce it?
I don't want to announce it yet. Okay. No.
You want to wait?
Let's let him stew on that.
Oh, let him stew on what?
On what I just said. On that beautifully formed teaser I just said. All right, come on. Don't screw it up. It was well planned out, all right?
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you guys learned something from that. And maybe it opened somewhat some people's minds, and maybe we just lost a bunch of people about it. Who knows?
Whatever. I mean, if we did, we did. It's fine.
Right? If we did, we did. I mean, I think it's a more of an important issue than and making people be comfortable. And I think that's the point. Sometimes you have to be uncomfortable for change to happen. And
exactly.
This is one of those times. So
exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
You know what, before we go into the whole outro thing,
yeah.
Do you know what the worst part, I think? Not really the worst, but one of the worst parts about this whole quarantine thing.
Huh.
My hair is ridiculous.
Oh.
I'm at it.
Oh, wait. So wait. Long. Mine's going to get even worse. Check this out.
It's.
Okay, first, I don't have any hair. And second. So there you go.
That's a good look for you, just straight
you can't,
up.
You can't beat that. Look at that.
Oh man, there you go. And with that, that's a show.
Oh wait, look how much hair I'm losing. I just should shave it off.
I mean,
I feel like though if I shave my head, I'd have such a bulbous huge head that I don't know if I'd like it.
It'll never come back. You shave it off, it's gone forever. Much better.
It took a bit to get those headphones on.
Now that's a show.
That's a show. Hey, if you guys liked what you heard, do us a favor. Go over to spoilerverse.com, spoilerverse.com, and check out all the podcasts, all the articles, and all the cool shit that we got for you. We also got a store, and what inside the store can they get, Johnny?
Yeah, in the store you can get t-shirts. You can get like the one you're wearing right now. You can get hoodies. You can get stickers. You can get mugs. A bunch of cool stuff. We get a few bucks. Go up there and help us out. And get stickers too.
Yep. Someday you'll get hats.
Someday we'll have hats. Yeah.
We're working on hats. It's difficult.
It is.
Why are hats so difficult?
It should be easy.
It should be easy.
No, it's hard. Yeah.
But if you like what you're hearing, please get on your podcatcher and look up Spoiler Country. Hit subscribe. Smash that like button, as they say on YouTube. Just, you know, if you like what you're hearing right now and what you're seeing, smash that like button. Subscribe.
Or just gently push it. Don't hurt your mouse.
Gently push it. Don't break your keyboard.
Yeah.
And then maybe leave us a comment. Let us know what your thoughts are. And
exactly. That's it.
That's it. Right.
We're good. What else? What else?
Well, in oceans of podcasts,
we are Cthulhu, and as Cthulhu compels you to do.
Open your mind. Read more. There you go.
That's what matters.
Yeah, it does.